At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, joins me as my colleague and co-host. And we welcome our very good guide on the Ukraine conflict, John Hardy of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, knowing that over these last days there's been movement in negotiation. The meeting in Istanbul, while a disappointment, was a positive in that we've been waiting several years for a conversation to start again involving the United States and Russia, the two major actors here. NATO is certainly part of the United States' remarks, however, not a profound part at this point because NATO leaders participated in going to Kyiv last week by the night train out of Warsaw. But after that, they are not at the table in Istanbul. The table in Istanbul involved what we were told was a low-level Russian delegation met by a senior-level American delegation. Mr. Rubio, the Secretary of State, was disappointed afterwards, and that led to the expectation of the two major leaders, Mr. Putin and Mr. Trump, the conversation in train, and that conversation will have results. We'll learn about it in time. We can expect the word positive to appear. Right now, because the headline is there, I read, Trump preps for Putin call with another meltdown over Bruce Springsteen. Mr. Trump apparently has in mind events of the late campaign. What we're focusing on is events on the battlefield. So that's why we look at John Hardy's most recent report of a new Russian commander on the battlefield while we're waiting for the diplomats to resolve the conflict. The battlefield will be determinative at the negotiating table. They will have a map out when they talk. John, a very good evening to you. What is it to pay attention to in that the Russians change commanders while talking of negotiation? Does that signal an intention or what you'd have to say is a rebuke? Good evening to you, John.
Hey, John. Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me back on the show. If we want to start with the negotiations, perhaps it'd be useful just to level set the kind of where we are and how we got here. So back in April, mid-April, the United States put forward a proposed peace framework that Ukrainians treated sort of skeptically. They're open to some of the components, but they gave a revised version that for the U.S. to consider. The United States sent that over to the Russians. They basically said, we don't want to discuss this. We want our own sort of document that is supposed to be put forward soon. Heading into the talks in Istanbul, first direct talks between the Russians and Ukrainians since 2022, some European leaders went to Ukraine, met with Zelensky, had a phone call with Trump where it seemed like they had agreement to put harsher sanctions on Russia if Putin continued to refuse a ceasefire. Putin's response was to propose these direct talks in Istanbul, basically trying to keep President Trump engaged in the process while still refusing an immediate ceasefire absent some pretty major Western and Ukrainian demands. So as you said, the Russians sent a pretty low-level delegation to the talks in Istanbul. Basically, the Russians are just trying to pick up where they left off with an abortive peace process in Istanbul back in spring 2022, where Moscow put forward various really harsh demands that Ukraine considers unacceptable. So things like permanent neutrality that Ukraine codifies, a ban on Western forces in Ukraine, restrictions on the Ukrainian military. Things of that nature. So those demands reportedly were reprised. And then the Russians also demanded that Ukrainians withdraw from the Russian annexed the regions Russia annexed in 2022, basically as a condition for a ceasefire. So it looked like, you know, the conditions were set for Washington to say, okay, you know, Putin, you're still not negotiating in good faith. We're going to join with the Europeans in imposing harsher sanctions. What Trump, President Trump actually did was say, we kind of like basically let Putin off the hook by saying, you know, nothing's going to happen without my personal involvement. And so, you know, I'm going to talk to Putin myself. And now here we are with the call today. You know, we'll see what comes out of that call. I would not expect a major change in the Russian position. You know, but we'll see how President Trump might respond.
John, one more detail. The new general, is that coincidental or purposeful? Is there a message in it?
Sure. So the commander of Russian ground forces, Oleg Selikov, he is turning 70 this week. So his retirement is not unexpected. I wouldn't link it directly to the negotiations. As I said, I think this is, you know, some time coming. And he was given sort of a dignified exit, kind of a sinecure as deputy secretary of the Russian Security Council. His replacement, Andrei Mordvichev, headed the Russian Central Military District and Center Group of Forces in Ukraine. That grouping has been responsible. It covers the area where Russia has allocated its main effort, basically since late 2023. That's the area around Avdiivka and Pokrovsk. So it's been responsible for most of Russia's relatively minor territorial advances over that time period, including capture of Avdiivka, et cetera. So those small victories have seen his star kind of rise. And now he's been tapped as head of the ground forces. He is a potential replacement for General Gerasimov, chief of the Russian general staff and overall commander in Ukraine, who's going to turn 70 in September. So that's just something to watch.
Bill, you have a question for John.
Yes, the new ground forces commander, is he well-liked? Is he seen as being effective within the rank and file as well as with Russia's military leadership? What can you tell us? Or tell us a little bit more about him.
Yeah, so he has, in his assignments throughout the war, he's, you know, performed fairly well, at least by, you know, Russian standards. Huge losses of men and materiel. I don't think the Kremlin is overly concerned with those. He, in addition to the fighting in the Avdiivka and Pokrovsk area earlier, as commander of 8th Army, he kind of led the assault in Mariupol earlier in the war. He's reputed, you know, you always have to be careful with these rumors from Russian sources, but he's reputed to be close to General Surovikin. Folks may remember him from briefly serving as overall commander in Ukraine and being kind of ousted and exiled to Africa after the Wagner mutiny in summer 2024. So in general, Russian observers have praised Mordvichev's elevation to ground forces commander. But this is, I think, just, you know, one personnel change of probably more to come, especially after the war, as Russia kind of, you know, brings in a new generation of leadership and tries to adapt to lessons learned in Ukraine.
John, about the battlefield, my sense of things is that this is good weather for campaigning, but that occasionally we've had notes about increased Russian activity. Do you see a break in the pattern? Because the articles that I've been reading for weeks emphasize the drones, emphasize air defense, but nothing about ground campaign. Is there anything underway that wasn't there a year ago?
I wouldn't say it's a major break from last year. I think what's different is, you know, right now, the Ukrainians have done a good job of kind of adapting to the Russian style of assaults. And we've discussed this on earlier podcasts, using strike drones of various types, along with mines, typically themselves emplaced by drones, to attrit Russian assault groups, often before they reach the thinly manned Ukrainian lines. So that the Russian rate of gain has been slower than it was last fall. But it is starting to inch up right now. I think that the average so far for May is something like eight square kilometers per day. If you compare that to the peak in November, it's like 24. But the Russians are higher than they were at this time last year. So it's possible that the trend we saw last year were basically that the gains steadily increased from kind of June onwards will repeat itself. Right now, I'd say that the main area where the Russians have been advancing is south of the city of Konstantinivka, basically trying to envelop that city from the southwest and also the nearby Turetsk, which the Russians are still struggling to take. And then that also that push kind of also sets them up to wrap around the city of Pokrovsk from the east. We've talked about that city before on the podcast. In general, though, you know, so Russia may end up taking these cities. That'll put it a bit closer to its goal of taking the rest of the Donbass. I think it's pretty unlikely that the Russians will achieve their goal of taking all of Donetsk Oblast by the end of this year. And it's really unlikely that they will be able to take the rest of the four regions that Putin annexed in September 2022. So I think that in general, you know, this war is not going to be decided. The main question is not, you know, whether Russia can take the next, you know, 10, 20, 30 kilometers in Donetsk or elsewhere. It's really this probably state of the two forces. And then, you know, how much support Ukraine is going to get from its Western partners, especially the United States. And I think that those will be the major kind of military dynamics at play in the negotiations. But I think in general, Russia's aims in terms of demanding effective Ukrainian capitulation in a number of different areas still, you know, vastly outstrip its military means. And really, that's been the case for much of the war.
What I'm not hearing is major offensive launched with heavy equipment backed up by air offense and more than small teams, large troop bodies. I'm not hearing anything that would be consistent with shock troop tactics. Is that correct, John?
So the Russians have been conducting, they've had the strategic initiative pretty much continuously since late 2023 when they launched the offensive on Avdiivka. And so the Russian offensive operations have continued since then. There's been, you know, kind of peaks and valleys in the rate of assault. So if you look at this past like February, March time period, the rate of assault dipped a bit along with the Russian rate of gain. It's increased now. So if you want to call that like a new offensive, sure, it's kind of like a surge in activity, I guess you could say. But I think some folks, when they hear reports of like a new offensive, they're imagining something like what Ukraine launched in Kursk in August 2024, where it's just, you know, it's very visible, the change, you know, there's large columns of equipment, et cetera. And that's not what the case here. It's more of a surge of activity. And you know, the Russians continue to use small unit action as their main method of attack.
John Hardy, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, and Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow FDD, my colleague and co-host. When we come back to the future, that negotiation that took place in the spring of 2022, right after the outbreak of hostilities. What is it exactly that the Russians are repeating? And how likely is it for there to be a concession? I'm John Batchelor.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches, but there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky, and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches, but there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.